Victoria Woodhull, spiritualist, suffragist, free lover, and in her time, the most famous woman in the United States. In 1872, she ran for president. By the time of her death, she'd been nearly erased from history. Until now. Welcome to UMO Ensemble's Vic, The Life and Times of Victoria C. Woodhull, Future Presidentess. Episode 3, Wall Street Aroused.
Madam, I suggest we review what has transpired thus far, for those who may not recall, if I may, with your permission.
You may try.
Thank you. We are transversing the rich terrain of your existence as Victoria Woodhull on this earthly plane.
Simple is best, sir. Although I am anything but.
I concur. On both counts. Right to the point. You were conceived in the fever pitch of a Methodist revival meeting.
I saw that in a vision.
And at 10, you had the first visitation from your spirit guide.
Demosthenes!
Madam, this may go more quickly without...
Interruption. Yes, I know. I shall be silent.
Thank you. You established a connection to the spirit world, which you used to heal people?
I am silent.
While healing, you met and married Dr. Canon Woodhull and left the Claflins behind. You bore 2 children, supported the 4 of you as both healer and actress, while the war between the states tore the country in 2. After which, you met and married your 2nd husband, Colonel James Blood. And neither of you were divorced at the time.
Stop it! We are nearly there. The time of my coming upon the consciousness of the world.
Yes. You haven't yet remembered me, then?
Should I?
We did meet in New York.
New York City. The energy was swirling. We were all coming out of such a long, ugly nightmare. Everything felt possible.
Victoria, the light awaits.
The light.
Your time comes.
I am the light that shines.
Victoria, the light awaits. Your time comes. Travel on. A house waits in readiness. Number 17 Great Jones Street.
Number 17 Great Jones Street. Where the heck is that?
New York City, Tenny.
New York City?
We're going to New York City?
So dirty, so full of people.
I'm coming.
I like cities.
New York City.
1868. The bustling metropolis of Gotham, a city where fortunes are made and lost in a matter of hours, where Boss Tweed helps one robber baron steal from another and takes a piece of pie from all. A city where brothels thrive next door to elegant brownstones, and where anyone can create themselves anew.
New money.
One famous resident, and indeed the richest man in America, is a fellow no one could have called a gentleman in his early days. A man who fought and scraped and schemed and dreamed, who learned how to earn from the labor of others and thus raked in the dough. Born in Staten Island in 1794, a man called Uncouth until he got too rich to ignore. I speak, of course, of the Commodore.
Cornelius Vanderbilt, born dirt poor, and worked real hard, took a little ferry in New York Harbor, and made it a steamship empire. And then I bought the railroad.
New money. Ooh, 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 new money. Gimme that, gimme that, gimme some of that new money.
A shrewd man of business, the Commodore has applied equally successful tactics in many areas of life. 20 years ago, his beloved wife, Mrs. Sophia Vanderbilt, now recently deceased, expressed doubts about moving their 13 children from their Staten Island farm to a sprawling new mansion on Washington Square. She proved to be remarkably intransigent until the Commodore sent her to a cure facility for the mentally unstable, where she quickly came to her senses.
Vicky, you were right. I do love New York City.
I'm always right, silly.
Oh, and I love our new house.
It is splendid, Victoria. We'll have the healing room set up shortly, and I've started to draw up an advertisement. The Magnetic Healing Institute.
I love you.
And I love you. Always.
I want to see the ad.
Of course. See, the Magnetic Healing Institute of New York City.
Featuring clairvoyance. Two gifted practitioners. Oh, that's nice.
Good morning.
Canning.
A New York City ad. Am I in this one?
No.
Come on, Canning. Let's go upstairs and see if Mama's made dinner.
Victoria, must he
Where
live
else
with...
would he go?
But it's...
And we need his prefix, even if he is the worst doctor ever.
I know, it's
Let's
just...
Let's not quibble. I'd rather dream with you, and write, and plan...
Dream and write we shall. I've been thinking of the essay we began, but my darling, we need to start earning.
That I am not worried about. The ad is beautiful. Now we need to find just one prominent patient.
Well, I did learn that the Commodore Vanderbilt is an avowed spiritualist. And his wife Sophia passed away recently, so...
You're a genius.
I am.
May 1868. Mysterious sisters open lavish magnetic healing institute at number 17 Great Jones Street. Our trusty neighborhood eye reports that one of the clairvoyants, Miss Tennessee Claflin, is beautiful enough to cure anybody of anything. The other lady is equally captivating, if less flamboyantly so. The whispered question of the hour is, are there any other forms of healing on offer?
Why are we thought wanton everywhere we go?
Oh, pay it no mind.
No one cares what we really do. They just see two women.
Hey, stay focused, Vicky. Who gives a whiff for what they're insinuating?
Insinuating? Have you been reading?
Even if we were offering the services they so enjoy imagining, what would be the harm? If we were men starting a business and succeeding, they'd applaud our gumption. Now, let's get in there.
Yes. Sister, I love you.
I know.
Oh, good day.
Good day.
We are here to call upon Commodore Vanderbilt, should he be at home. Mrs. Victoria Woodhull.
And Miss Tennessee Claflin.
Well, now, those are the most delightful names I've heard in a very long time. I am Cornelius Vanderbilt, known to friends and enemies as the Commodore. Please come in, ladies. I have heard so very much about you.
Thank you. Oh, what an exquisite home, sir.
Commodore, please.
You answer your own door, Commodore.
On some occasions, it suits me, Miss Claflin.
Oh, you may call me Tennessee.
Miss Tennessee, I am delighted to make your acquaintance, and yours, Mrs. Woodhull.
Thank you, Commodore. If I may, how is it that you know of our work? We only arrived in New York mere weeks ago.
Well, Mrs. Woodhull, you should not underestimate the research I do when I am interested in something. And I am interested in your abilities. If I may explain.
Please.
My wife, Sophia. Well, recently she...
Our deepest condolences.
Thank you, ma'am.
As soon as we arrived in this invigorating city, my sister sensed that one of its greatest citizens was troubled. And I can just see the toll it's taken on you.
Doggone it! I miss her, Miss Tennessee.
Tenny, please.
Miss Tenny, you are a comfort. Do you all think you could get her to talk to me?
Vicky?
Yes, Commodore, I do. I can feel it. She's been waiting for you.
I brought your wrap.
I am the light that shines.
You are the light.
You're a good girl, Zulu.
Mama, you were an actress? And What did that mean, married by the spirits?
We are in New York City now.
But...
with Vanderbilt.
Oh, I remember him. He was intimidating.
Tenny gave him tips.
Tips?
Secret tips. She said they were visions.
They weren't?
She never had visions.
Then?
From prostitutes.
From?
At Madame Ida's. She lived...
Mrs. Thompson? Around the corner in the mansion. Grandpa said it was a boarding house. He went on walks past it. They'd be on the veranda sometimes in the afternoons. They were nice.
Tenny made friends there, like everywhere. They told her...
What?
Secrets. Jim Fisk loved Madame Ida's and he loved to talk.
Is that...
Vanderbilt invested for us. Then Tenny would share some earnings with the girls.
You're looking mighty fine today, my little sparrow.
Calm, how's that achy old back today?
Oh, the damp just gets in there.
Well, you just settle on in and let me get to helping you.
Oh, I don't know what I'd do without you, Sparrow.
I don't know what I'd do without you, you old goat.
Oh, damn it all.
Your back sure is growly. What's got you so worried?
Oh, those gall-dang buffoons are at it again.
Oh, which buffoons?
Fisk and Gould.
The fat man and the ghoul.
They ain't satisfied with just swindling me out of the Erie Railroad.
What are they up to now?
Well, that's just it. I can't for the life of me figure it out.
I might be able to get a sense for you.
I'd be ever so great.
Hush now. I'm listening. No. Wait, I'm seeing something heavy.
Heavy?
And shiny, shining. It's glittering. No. No. It's golden.
Oh.
Gold?
Gold. By golly.
Gold. Is that good to know, Com?
I think knowing that might be excellent. Yes, indeed.
Well, your back is loosening up right under my hands.
Ah, I'm feeling the need to get to work, Sparrow.
Calm, I got a favor to ask.
Anything. If I can provide it, it's yours.
Well, Vicky and me, we were hoping to do something different this time.
September 20th, 1869, Black Friday. Investors panic. Speculators ruined. The dastardly team of Fisk and Gould are foiled after a secret scheme to corner the gold market. Thousands of men lose their proverbial shirts while others watch fortunes rise. Enigmatic medium Mrs. Victoria Woodhull, rumored protege of Commodore Vanderbilt, spends the day trading from her carriage with entrancing younger sister Tennessee, both displaying remarkable aplomb in the midst of masculine madness.
Oh, Commodore, that was extraordinary. Thank you for your belief in us.
Well, you and your sister have very fine minds for business, Miss Victoria.
Calm, that's just about the highest praise in the world coming from you.
We are honored.
Well, I wouldn't say it if it weren't true.
I have had a most bold vision, Commodore.
I always welcome them, ma'am.
This one, I hesitate to speak it.
Why would you do that?
Well...
I haven't heard you say a thing yet I didn't like or profit from.
I am afraid you will find me full of hubris.
Full of what?
Too prideful.
Ah, nothing wrong with pride if you got something to back it up.
I saw rooms. A suite, elegantly furnished, with mahogany counters.
And marble floors and... big, sparkling windows?
It appeared to be a new brokerage firm.
A new firm?
With Tennessee and I running it.
Well, now. Well, well, well. That would be the...
the first woman-owned stock brokerage in New York City.
February 5th, 1870. Wall Street aroused by bewitching brokers and queens of finance. The grand opening of Woodhull Cleflin Brokers and Bankers has brought a veritable crush to Wall Street, with onlookers congregating by the thousands, all eager to witness what many can scarcely believe is taking place. The brokers of the hour, indeed of the century, are attired in matching wool suits in a deep navy blue, Mrs. Woodhull with an elegant white rose at her collar, while Tennessee sports a men's silk kerchief peeking out of her jacket pocket. Both are clearly eschewing the customary corsets of the day. The offices themselves are as elegantly furnished, with a grand portrait of the firm's esteemed benefactor, Commodore Vanderbilt, in prominent pride of place.
That's a right nice likeness of me, Sparrow.
Handsome old goat.
Mrs. Woodhull, excuse me. Mrs. Woodhull, if I may.
Yes?
Johnny Green from the New York Sun. What exactly is your intention with all this business, madam?
Business, sir?
What I mean to say is, speculations with stock are dangerous, and sources say your experience in this field is somewhat limited.
I studied law in my father's office for 6 years.
You tell him, Tenny.
And the best backers in the city endorse us.
I wonder if the Commodore could speak to his reasons.
We made over $700,000 in one day, sir. I expect with our own brokerage firm that will rise exponentially, not merely for us, but more importantly, for our clients.
Then may I ask the larger question of why, ladies? How do you hope to better the lives of your fellow female citizens?
Just wait until we get ourselves firmly established in our business, and we will show you what we will do for the rights of our sex.
With respect, reputable sources have claimed your business background.
Were we to notice what reputable sources say, we would never venture outside. I despise what powdered, counter-jumping dandies say. And now, we must get to work.
Powdered, counter-jumping dandies? I resent that remark.
Actually, you resemble it, Mr.
Edward Van Schalk. Accompanied by...
Mr. Hugh Hastings, let me be blunt. Ladies, you will never succeed.
Well, sir, I know from personal experience that a woman is just as capable of making a living as a man, maybe even more so. So I don't give a fig what society thinks.
Oh, well, when you say it that way, I
We
agree.
Agree with you, Miss Tennessee.
Of course you do. Adieu.
Mr. J. Cook.
And Mr. John Bonners, ma'am.
Top of the morning to you.
Yeah.
Charmed, I'm sure. How may we help you?
We've called out of mere curiosity.
Oh, that's right. Yes, we have.
How delightful.
Ladies!
Hello again.
Misters Hastings and Van Schalk, with freshly combed hair and exquisite new cravats, and what lovely flowers, my word.
We were wondering, ma'am, if you would...
Yes.
We'd like,
How does Central stand?
Yes, of course. Charmed, I'm sure. Thank you all so very much. Colonel Blood will be glad to assist you. Time for me to tootle on, gentlemen. Good day.
We'll be here, ma'am.
Right here.
Fare thee well.
Phew. Onward to the fun part.
Behind the public eye, society wives and widows, teachers, milliners, actresses, and reportedly the more elite ladies of the evening seek the company and advice of the sisters, while a formidable pair of advocates for women's suffrage arrive to pay their respects.
Miss Anthony, Mrs. Stanton, welcome.
Champagne, strawberry.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Charmed, ladies. I believe I spotted the Reverend Beecher and Theodore Tilton outside. It looked like they couldn't get close enough to come in.
There certainly is a lot of hubbub, and some unfortunately boisterous men upstairs, I might add.
But not here. Our foremost desire is to support women, to offer them sanctuary, education, and access to the world of finance. Miss Anthony, perhaps you'd accompany me into the heart of our work?
Well... Yes, I would like that.
Mrs. Woodhull, I assume you and your charming sister are suffragists. It would be outlandish were you not. That much is clear. Therefore, I am curious about your thoughts on this 15th Amendment cataclysm and how it will affect our cause.
It concerns me, Mrs. Stanton, as it clearly...
How can they not see that white women will be degraded if the Negro man precedes us into the franchise? Forgive me for speaking so forthrightly, but I cannot tolerate a strategy both unfair and unintelligent.
I understand.
May I speak frankly, Mrs. Woodhull?
Of course,
Educated women voters are needed to offset the effect of former slaves whose ignorance, which is certainly no fault of their own and deeply deserving of remedy, could damage our very political system. Proponents of the 15th, like Frederick Douglass, a learned friend, mind, must stand and answer why women should be compelled to stand aside and see Sambo walk into the kingdom first.
This is not acceptable.
Mr. Douglas.
Madam, I know that this is your recollection of events, but had I been present at this moment, I would hope that you would welcome my insights. You did, after all, name me as your vice presidential candidate without ever meeting or asking me, I must note.
I wish you had joined me. Of course, sir, the floor is yours.
Thank you, madam. Mrs. Stanton, I have the deepest of respect for your cause and for you as an individual.
And I you, Mr. Douglas.
But you must hear this. When women, because they are women, are hunted down, when they are dragged from their houses and hung upon lampposts, when they are in danger of having their homes burnt down over their heads, then they will have an urgency to obtain the ballot equal to our own.
Mr. Douglas, you have been both friend and colleague for a good many years, and I ask that you not willfully misunderstand me. You know that I call for a universal suffrage, one that enfranchises Negro men and all women at the same time.
We both know that that is unlikely, at best.
To order them one by one is an insult to the whole. Consider your sisters and wives, now condemned to a triple bondage of slavery, race, and gender that no man knows. Do you not agree, Mrs. Woodhull? Mrs. Woodhull?
Why is she staring like that?
Vicky. Mrs. Stanton? Tenny, Miss Anthony?
Enlighten us, sister.
I believe that political power must be backed by economic power. Only by becoming independent can women aspire to true freedom. We must get the vote and get to keep our rightful property as well. That is not simply a path to true equality. It is the engine that will power us there.
Yes. Well said, Vicky.
Well said indeed. Susan, take this down for the revolution. These two businesswomen are received just like men. Two bright, vivacious creatures full of energy, perseverance, intellect, and pluck. Here are the elements of success.
After today's fanfare, this colonist can most assuredly say, we men of intelligence happily anticipate the time when the bass and baritone of Cellar 60 shall harmonize with the tenor and soprano of Baia 30, and the halls of the Stock Exchange shall exhibit costumes as diverse as the floors of a ballroom. Vive la frou-frou!
Surely you remember me now, madam.
You? You wrote...
I was a columnist.
You called us wanton.
I did not. I stopped.
You did. You said...
More water?
Go away.
Hush, breathe.
Vive la frou-frou.
What?
Pluck.
Pluck?
Success.
Success. Will you ever stop chasing it, Mama?
Never.
The Life and Times of Victoria C. Woodhull, future presidentess, continues with episode 4, Onward and Upward. Written by Maria Glanz, directed by Elizabeth Klobe, with sound design by James Bigby Garver. For a full list of participating artists and future broadcasts, please visit UMO Ensemble at www.umo.org. Thank you to the National Endowment for the Arts, For Culture, Norcliffe Foundation, Horizons Foundation, and generous private donors.